is Will Tinkin.
Thanks for listening to the Bitter Comics Podcast. And here's your host, JT Foreman.
Good job, dude. Can I have a high five?
Yes.
Good job. That's really nice.
Well, welcome to episode 76 of Bitter Comics. I am JT Foreman, and I am here with my good friend, Sam, the comedian, Stewart. How's it going, Sam?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks a lot for doing the show. And actually, I'm down here in Los Angeles visiting, and he's allowing me to sleep on the floor in his living room, which this giant air mattress, I think it's actually more comfortable than the mattress I have at my own apartment back down in Fresno. Or up in Fresno, I guess, because it's north of here. So yeah. So thanks. Thanks for letting me crash here. I wouldn't be able to come down to L.A. and get turned down at open mics if it weren't for the fact that I had somewhere free to play to stay. So right. I really appreciate it.
All right, good.
We begin our opening segment with our... let me try that again. We begin our show, as always, with our opening segment. JT was a real prick last week.
Okay.
In which I apologize for the cruel, offensive, and probably racist things I said last episode. So, for my insensitivity in episode 75, I'd like to apologize to black people, Danny Minch, every comedian who's ever worked with Danny Minch, mops, and hard drives.
And the blue comedians.
And the blue comedians. If you'd like to know why I'm apologizing to these things, or if you feel I owe any additional, if you'd like to know why I'm apologizing to any of these things, check out episode 75 or all our previous episodes at bittercomics.podbean.com. If you'd like to know, if you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, don't worry, I'll edit all that crap out later. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, go to that website, bittercomics.podbean.com, scroll down a little bit, and on the right-hand side of the page, there's a button you can click on that'll open up iTunes and subscribe you to the podcast. And if you feel I owe any additional apologies, or to send any comments, send us an email to bittercomics@hotmail.com, and in the subject line, please put, dude, Hotmail is so old, you need a Gmail account.
Okay, I like that. I got a Gmail. Yeah. I had to upgrade, man.
Well, you know, I don't remember who it was, but some dude I met at a show a few weeks ago. I handed him my business card, and he looked at the card, and he's like, "VistaPrints, right?" Yeah. I said, "Well, yeah, it's VistaPrints." I said, "You know, any real professional that sees that is going to judge you for it." And I said, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah, that's right, because they're going to see that you just didn't really spend any money on it."
Yeah.
And you know, they're also, I see your email here. It's bitter, you know, jtforeman@hotmail.com. They're going to look at that and they're going to be like, "You know, it only costs $10 a year to have your own domain name. You really should have jtforeman@jtforeman.com."
Right.
Because, you know, and I was like, "Do you do publicity and sell business cards and stuff?" He's like, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do." He's like, "Oh, okay. So you're just telling me this stuff to help me out, though. This has nothing to do with the fact that you'd like me to buy business cards from you.
Right.
Or get you to set up an email account.
Right.
Or have you work as my publicist." Well, you know, if you get 10%, that's going to cost you money, because I don't even think I get gas when I go to do most of my shows.
Right.
So I'd be happy to sign you as my manager as long as you will pay 10% of what it costs me to go and do comedy shows.
That's awesome, dude.
And he was like, "Nah, well, you know, when you're serious, you give me a call." And then he handed me his business card, which was all like glossy and two-sided and like really fancy, and which sucks because I got some meat stuck between my teeth later on, and his business card was too thick for me to get it in between there to clean the meat out of from my teeth. You know, it's just, that's why VistaPrints is so much better.
Right.
Because you know what? People may look at my business card and think, cheap bastard, but they know they're going to be going out to eat later.
Right.
And they're going to end up getting a little piece of meat or maybe a piece of lettuce stuck between their teeth, and I'm there for them. And they're going to remember that.
Yeah. That's awesome, dude. It sucks. Starting out, I remember the first couple of shows that I did. I ran into can I say names? Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I ran into Dino Archie.
Yeah. See, comic from Fresno. I have seen videos of a comedy. I have not met him yet.
Oh, dude, he's an awesome guy, and I got to meet him in person. It was actually, what was funny about it was the night that I met him, Danny Minch and Joe
Simon
were there. Danny Minch is to my left. Dino is in front of me, and Joe Simon's on my right. Danny Minch is a good, I would say, about 15 feet away from me, okay? But Joe is literally maybe a foot in front of me.
Okay? Yeah, Joe does that.
He looks at me, and he goes, "Hey, Dino!" And I was like, oh, okay, this guy calls every black guy he knows Dino. So I thought it was fine. I was like, oh, okay, that's just what he does. Danny Minch, though, heard the entire conversation and is laughing his ass off 50 feet away from us. And I'm like, I don't understand why this guy's laughing so hard. But every time Joe called me Dino, Danny just, he laughed hysterically. At the end of the night.
Hold on, time out. I got to interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
Why would you think that someone might call every black person they meet Dino?
I've run into situations where I was talking to somebody, and usually older people. And okay. Somebody who's in the area usually goes, you know what, we apologize. This guy grew up in a different time, and he just calls all black people, you know, whatever he's called me.
Okay. Has it been oddball things? Because, like, I could see, not saying I understand or I think it's right, but I could see, some old person who's used to being a racist, calling every black person boy or whatever.
Right.
But.
Oh, it's been worse. Oh, it's been weird crap. I've gotten weird stuff. I got Nutty Boy, which was, I guess, a brown. It's like some kind of Snickers type.
Okay.
Candy. So I got Nutty Boy a bunch of times. I've lived in Mississippi. I've lived in Alabama. You run into those people.
Yeah.
So I actually, the first time I went was actually upset because I didn't have a racist thing happen to me the first time. Then the second time I went, I was like, oh, there it is. Some guy called me Nutty. But I guess I was like, Dino, okay, I guess dinosaurs were brown. I could see it. All right.
I don't think that works, but if you know Joe Simon, it almost makes sense. Go ahead.
Right. So Joe's calling me Dino the entire night, right? And I'm just like, yeah, Dino, whatever, right? And Danny finally lets me know that at the end of the night, there's another guy there who's a comic, and his name is Dino Archie. And I just thought that was so, like, when I finally figured out what the joke was, it was hilarious because Joe had no idea I wasn't the guy he thought he was talking to.
Well, in defense of Joe Simon and all pseudo-racist white people, I won't say they're racist white people,
yeah.
But I won't say they're not racist either. In defense of pseudo-racist white people, it's not that you all look alike. It's just that there's like 10 looks.
Yeah.
And so you're one of 10 people.
Well, what sucks is I've always met people who always go, you kind of look like so-and-so. And I've never met a guy. Actually, I met one guy. And we actually took a picture together. When I was in the Navy, I met a guy who looked so much like me. I was like, dude, I am sorry. This is going to sound so weird. But I would love to take a picture with you.
Well, you look like Ray Parker Jr., but no, I'm just kidding.
Okay, yeah, so it's weird. So he was kind of cool about it. Let me take the picture. And his wife was like so freaked out about the fact that we look so much alike. The only difference was...
So you look like him.
Yeah, he's older.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's weird because the only actual difference from us really was the fact that I was a couple inches taller than him. Other than that, we looked so much alike. I went out of my way to take a picture with this guy. I was like, dude, we got to look alike, right?
Yeah.
So, and his wife agreed. She was like, you guys look a lot alike or whatever. So, but it's weird. I always get those people who are like, oh, dude, you look like this guy. The funny part is Dino gets on stage and I'm like, I look just like that guy.
So you actually do look similar to Dino. So yeah.
Dino has a little mustache. I've got a mustache, and we smile similar. So,
well, don't feel too bad because at least you look like somebody who's cool. Right.
Yeah.
Cause I used to shave and I'd wear glasses. I'm wearing contacts right now.
Yeah.
And I really look a lot like Mark David Chapman, who was the guy who shot John Lennon.
Crap.
So, I look like one of the world's most famous murderers.
It's weird. You remind me a lot of, and you're not going to like this, but Anthony Hopkins is what I gave you.
Anthony Hopkins?
I gave you Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah. Wait. Anthony Hopkins... And Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs?
No.
Or Anthony Hopkins in the one where he grew up with the gorillas and he was talking to
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah. I like that movie.
which Anthony Hopkins? I will give
you. You ever see a movie called Meet Joe Black?
I saw bits and pieces of it.
That one. That
okay, Anthony so Hopkins. I'm the Anthony Hopkins who's rich and about to die.
Yeah, that guy. All right, so all right. When you make it, you know you're going to die.
Okay, cool.
Right.
Thanks. Wait, what? Hold on. This is bullshit.
Right.
Cool. Well, but, okay.
But it's weird, man. Like, people tell me, like, everybody's got some kind of celebrity lookalike, you know. And I love that, which means that, to me, that means that as America, if we're moving forward, if I know all my friends have a celebrity lookalike.
Well, maybe it's just that there are so many celebrities. Nah, I don't, because, I mean, look at the world a couple hundred years ago. There are people who are celebrities. I'm not talking about someone who's famous because they're a billionaire or millionaire industrialist, right, or because they're a president or some important politician, but someone who has just become famous through entertainment.
Yeah.
What you basically have is writers.
Okay.
And nobody knows what they look like, really, for the most part.
You're right.
Or, actors on stage, and there's no, like, you know, it's not like, oh, well, we'll play New York, and then next week we'll play L.A. You know, people didn't get around that much. It wasn't until TV and movies when someone could be nationally famous for their appearance, an actor or a celebrity of some kind.
Well, I mean,
and now, especially, you know, first you get cable, and yeah, now there's 100 cable channels, and they got to fill 24 hours on every one of those.
Yeah.
So they got so many more TV shows that even you have been on television.
Right.
So I'm sorry, that was messed up. But you know what I mean, though.
I know. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
There are so many people on TV now.
Right.
Compared to 10, 15 years ago.
You're right.
That it's just, you know, and it's funny because I hear people talking about how, oh man, the cast of Seinfeld, you know, Jerry Seinfeld was getting $10 million an episode, and the other members of the cast were getting $2 or $3 million an episode, and that kind of stuff's never going to happen again. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know if that's true, but let's pretend it is. Instead of Jerry Seinfeld getting $10 million and the other three on the cast each getting $3 million,
right,
there's 50 different shows, each of them's getting a couple hundred thousand.
Okay.
And honestly, I think that's better.
Yeah, that
plus
is better.
Plus people then got more choices of what they can watch.
Right, exactly.
And,
exactly,
you know, instead of just a couple of people, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, I read this article that said once it's all said and done, with the syndication from his show and everything else, he's going to be well into a billionaire just from the Seinfeld show.
Right.
I'd rather see that money get divided up amongst a bunch of different creative people who are doing a bunch of different creative things,
right,
rather than one person, you know, one creative person. Now, nothing against Jerry Seinfeld. I really like the fact that there's so many cable channels because, well, it gives more creative people an opportunity to do the thing that they have this passion for.
Yeah, it sucks, man, because we have all the money and they know who to pick. Like, we have all the money going to certain people and they just hoard the hell out of it like it's going to disappear one day when it's not. And I don't know why there aren't people in those positions who think, hey, you know, let's spread the money around. But I think what it is there are people who are from that lifestyle specifically, and they don't that thought never crossed their mind.
Yeah.
Like, only as much as I could make in my lifetime for me, and that's what they think. That's all they.
Well, I guess they figure, well, the more money you get, the less likely it is you'll ever be poor again.
Right.
Because you're protecting yourself. But you know what? I've heard of people doing really good and then things go away, but they manage to protect themselves so that they're doing all right the rest of their lives.
Right.
But I've heard of other people who do amazing and it causes them to go crazy and they just blow it all. You know, because, yeah, like,
it's,
you know, some of the greatest, some of the most popular bands in the country, like, you know, Quiet Riot, I think, is an example.
Okay.
They were huge. They were selling platinum albums and playing in stadiums, but they blew all their money on women and coke.
Yeah.
And now they're doing a reunion tour playing small theaters, and the only reason they hated each other and broke up, but the only reason they got back together is because the drummer was tired of painting billboards for his brother's company.
Wow.
And you know, I think it was the drummer who ended up with that job. And I mean, imagine that. One day you're in a rock band playing a 50,000 seat theater.
Wow.
With screaming fans and chicks just dying to blow you after the show. And then you spend all that money, and 10 years later you're playing at you know, Johnny Liptowitz's bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
Because that's the best gig you can get.
It's weird, man. Like how people can fall so hard, but really so fast as well. Because you brought up a band, but I'm going to bring up. I think professional athletes are well overpaid. Like they're just tremendously overpaid because all they're doing is something that you could do when you're in high school, but they're making money doing it. That's
well, you know, they their pay started going up, and then the owners of the play. Because you know what. The bleacher seats to see the Oakland A's shouldn't cost $50.
Right.
You know what? But the reason the price went up on those so much is the owner of the place is making a fortune. The players are making near pretty low money for the longest time. Like till the 70s, professional ball players did not make much money, whether it be football or baseball or whatever. They didn't make much.
Right.
And then somewhere around there, people started demanding more money, and their pay went up. But then the owners of the clubs said, okay, well, we're going to start jacking up the prices on the tickets, and then they're making tons of money off of the TV.
Right.
So you know what? When the football player says, I want $5 million a year,
yeah,
and I see the owner of the club charging $150, $250 a seat at the stadium to see the football game and getting $1 million on the TV, or, you know, millions of dollars a game on the TV contract.
Right.
You know, I have a hard time saying that it's the players getting too much money. I think both the players and the team owners are taking too much.
Yeah. Well,
and you know, they need to, the owner needs to cut his income in half. The player needs to cut his income in half, and then they need to cut the ticket price in half.
Yeah, in my example,
we're gonna just take a break real quick. We'll get right back to your point as soon as we get back. This is Bader Comics. I'm here with my friend Sam Stewart. I am JT Foreman, and we will be right back. This is JT Foreman. I'm here with my good friend Sam Stewart. We are the Bader Comics, and we're back. All right. So you were talking about football players and baseball players getting paid too much.
Yeah, but my example is a basketball guy. Allen Iverson was one of the highest grossing basketball players of all time when he was playing.
Yeah.
And now he's talking about he can't even afford a cheeseburger, and he's crying on NBA.
When was he playing?
ESPN. He played, I want to say, right around the same time that Jordan decided to come back into the game. So
he was playing during the time when players really started making a lot of money.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
like the dude who married Kim Kardashian. I had never heard of him before. I don't really follow basketball all that much. Had you heard of him before?
Yeah, Chris Humphries? Nah. Well, he was a guy who was trying to get into the NBA.
Okay, so you've never heard of him.
No.
I looked up his salary. He makes you know, I might be remembering this wrong, but I think he made like $5 million a year.
Kid
he was gosh. Like a mid-level paid player.
Right.
You know, so he's not a star, but he's not a bench warmer either.
Right.
But as just an average player, and NBA average player is really good. This has nothing to do with how good he is, but an average player is making $5 million a year.
Right.
You know, so that's wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've talked about the guys who are in the warm up squads who never step on the court during the regular game, but they just play with their players when, you know, they're warming up or whatever. They make 3-figure salaries, and you're somebody who's designed to get beat by the So really, as long as you can catch a ball and throw it, you're making 3 figures.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, you know, one thing I think that one of the big problems is that you know. What kind of people usually end up as a professional athlete?
Selfish.
Not necessarily selfish, but poor.
Oh.
And less educated.
Yeah. Kevin Durant was super. He grew up right around where I lived.
Yeah.
And trust me, he's very poor. And that's who they target.
So, people like that don't understand how about dealing with money and what to. And you know, so all you go from being broke to this college is going to pay your way, so you'll play for them for a few years. To here's several million dollars to continue playing, and you know, but before that, they were living in, you know, maybe what, living in the projects. Their parents are making $12,000 a year and living on welfare or something,
right?
And all of a sudden, and it's completely unsurprising that they end up broke. I remember reading the one article that every year the NFL would have I'll just call it a meeting that every rookie had to go to. You were required to go to this, or you don't get to go into the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy goes up there to begin the speech and says, okay, first question. Who here has been approached by someone with ideas of what they can do with their money? And then everyone raises their hand. He says, okay, next question. Do you know if that person has a criminal record or not? Wow. And now it's like that. Now I've got their attention.
Yeah,
and
now
he starts
singing
explaining things about, you know, you got to deal with your money. Because what, average football career is 5 years?
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
yeah.
If you make $1 million,
if
you make $1 million a year, let's just say it's that.
Yeah.
You make $1 million for 5 years, you could easily live on that really well for the rest of your life.
Right.
If you're even remotely careful.
Right.
But you think, oh, well, I made $5 million this year. I'm going to mortgage the $250 million house. And, oh, wait, you broke your leg. You're not playing anymore. Or,
yeah. And
oh, wait, this other rookie, he's better than you. So they decided to make you the second string quarterback, and now you're not making it. And right. So, yeah, you.
It sucks because everyone thinks, oh, that's not going to happen to me. It only happens every once in a while. But, dude, look at this year, RG3. Play 1 year, and all of a sudden he's got a really big injury. You know, that's probably going to change the rest of his career. He's probably never going to play as good as he did this year ever again. And I'm thinking the entire time he's been recuperating, because he didn't play after, you know, he got hurt or whatever. He's probably thinking, man, I never in a million years thought that would be me.
Yeah.
So how many guys is that going to happen to?
Yeah. And, you know, and it's not just that. I mean, I wonder how many. I remember reading about this guy. He sold a movie script for $1 million. And he's like, and he went and he spent a bunch of money and bought a really great house and everything. And then it was never able to sell another script. And he ended up with the house getting repossessed and the car getting taken back. And he lost everything.
Right.
I mean, if I sold a movie script for $1 million, if I made an effort, I could live on that for the rest of my life.
Dude, I tell people all the time.
No, but you have to realize that big thing that happened to you, that might be the only thing time that happens.
Right.
So protect it, you know.
Right. As soon as I make my first million, it's going to be very hard to motivate me to continue to do what I'm doing.
Yeah. If I had enough money that I didn't have to get out of bed, I probably wouldn't.
Right.
You know, you've had that conversation with people. Oh, what would you do if you won $50 million in the lottery? Or, you know, if you suddenly came into that kind of money, I'll tell you what I would do is I would build a house next door to the Bunny Ranch.
Right.
I mean, you've heard of people with $1,000 a day cocaine habits. I would have a $1,000 a day pussy habit.
Wow.
I just call the place up and, I need a fix.
Yeah.
You just send her over. And
yeah, with that said, I'd probably go to some country and put a house somewhere in the middle of nowhere and then, you know, just...
Well, you know the idea a buddy of mine had, my friend Steve Meyer, who's my roommate when I lived in Texas, he said what he would do is he would drop his U.S. citizenship, move to some Central or South American country, become a citizen there, and then bribe whoever he had to become a member of their diplomatic corps. And then move back to the United States as their ambassador.
Wow.
You still get to live in the U.S. and you've got diplomatic immunity. How awesome is that?
Wow.
You know, I know. He was like...
So he's shooting prostitutes in the face and all kinds of stuff, dude.
He's like speeding through school zones while hookers snort cocaine off of his cock. They couldn't even arrest the hooker because she's carrying his diplomatic package.
Wow. That's awesome, dude.
That would be...
That's just, and you get a limo.
And you get a limo.
Yeah. Oh man! So the guy's a genius. Your roommate was a genius.
Basically, my roommate was a genius. Yeah.
What's he doing now?
He's fixing bicycles. He was really into bike riding and, you know, off road and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And kind of got away from it after high school, and he got back into it, and he got a job as a bicycle mechanic at a bike store, and then met a girl through it, you know, going to those events, and then. I think he's living in Connecticut now and living with her.
Oh, dude, Connecticut's freaking awesome.
Or not Connecticut, Kentucky.
Okay. Oh, well, never mind.
Never mind.
Connecticut is gorgeous. If I could live anywhere in the Union, it would be Connecticut.
Yeah, it was. You know, I like Connecticut, but people were rude.
Really?
That was my experience.
Well, where were you, though?
I was in Groton.
Oh, yeah, you went. No, right. The same place I was.
You know, I lived in New London across the river.
Well, see, so did
everyone, I. Everyone told me, oh, man, it's dangerous over there.
Yeah.
Man. You're going to get robbed. I was like, no one bugged me. And then they say, well, yeah, but that's probably because you're 250, 6'1".
Yeah.
And, you know, you're kind of big. No one's going to bug you. It's not like I'm a football player, but I'm not tiny either.
Yeah, not.
It's like, you know, the 5'4" little Asian girl, she's probably going to have some trouble if she she lives in New London. Someone at the open mic yesterday, the black dude with the English accent.
Yeah.
Do you know who that is?
I know his name. I can't remember off the top of my head. Right. He kind of like Will Smith, right?
Kind of.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I can't remember his name, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He had this big long bit about you know, the neighborhood he's from is dangerous, and you know, talking to people about the dangerous neighborhood, and you know, I was going to visit my aunt, and I go to her, I ask if her neighborhood's dangerous, and she's like, no. So I go over to visit, and the dogs are barking, and she has to lock all these unlock five different locks to let right. him in. And she said, I thought you said this neighborhood was safe. And she said, well, yeah, it is safe. Nobody's getting through that door. But you know, listen to him talk. I just remember thinking, how safe your neighborhood. A lot of it depends on who you are.
Yeah.
Because like I live in a pretty safe neighborhood, but that's because my neighbors like me.
Yeah.
You know. If my neighbors didn't like me, the neighborhood might not be quite so safe anymore.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, a lot of people consider things when they're moving into a neighborhood, and I just recently moved. So the only thing I told the landlord, and I told every landlord this when I was moving, was I don't want any kids in the neighborhood and no black people.
Well, you know, most of the people I've seen walking in and out of this building have been black.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny? I saw this building. And
the girl came in last night with her boyfriend. She was wearing this black and white striped skin tight pants.
I've seen her.
You know, I'll be honest. Okay, all the black people are going to be mad at me now, but a giant booty is disgusting.
Okay.
It just is. Okay, yeah. I just, you know, you like it, great.
Right.
You know, you get to like that. I like skinny chicks. I want a chick so skinny I get paper cuts on my dick. Okay, that's what I want, a skinny chick.
Right, right, right.
But you know, this girl, it wasn't huge, but it was just perfectly shaped. You know, it was like, you know, it's round, and it just, could I use your butt as a pillow?
Yeah.
It looks so comfortable in between there.
Right, right, right.
But anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. But you know, when I saw this place, I've only pulled over to call another place, but I was like, you know what, let me go ahead and check this apartment out. So I went.
Well, you know, the apartment manager, or you know, the person in the office when I got here Saturday is a little old white lady.
Yeah, little old white lady.
So I mean, if a little old white lady can be the manager of the place,
yeah,
then the place is pretty safe.
Yeah,
live.
That she was old. I like the fact that she was old. But when there's something hilarious. No. She really liked me, dude. She was like, it's just something about you that I like. And,
well, you know, that she told me that, too. I was like, yeah, I was looking for Sam Stewart. I don't know his apartment number. She's like, oh, I know Sam. I like him. He's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. She
likes you.
And then I found out, me and my roommate, we found out that both our kids are African American.
Oh, really?
Both of them.
Oh, is she married to a black guy or something?
Yeah, no, not only was she married to a black guy, her claim to fame was she was a hippie, and she slept with a lot of black guys. Like, she just told us this. And I'm looking at my roommate like, man.
I think she's trying to butter you up.
Dude, I look at my roommate and I was like, if I ever come home and the rent's like $600 cheaper than it was the month before, I'll just nod your way, okay? You know, but it's funny. And she talks to us all the time. Every time she sees me coming in the building, she stops me and she wants to have like a 10-minute, 20-minute conversation or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, and it's weird because she shows me the picture of her daughter. She tells me that her daughter goes to school that I go to. And she goes, if you ever see her, don't talk to her, though. And it wasn't on those, I'm a mom, don't talk to my daughter type of things. It was like, no, I'm jealous of the fact that she's younger and more fit, you know. And I'm like, okay, you know what I'm saying? But, you know.
I think she wants you, man.
Yeah, yeah. So between those two things, I was like, you know what, living here might not.
She knows where your apartment is, and she's got a key.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's weird because she's, and my roommate said the same thing. She calls me all the time.
Yeah.
And she's come to the apartment a bunch of times. And I just don't feel like that's something she does to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, with all the units that are here and all the people that live in them, I don't think there's another group of people that can go, oh, yeah, she calls us all the time. But literally, you can go on my phone right now, and she's probably called me like 8 times since yesterday. Yeah. And he had a package. My roommate had a package the other day.
He's got jungle fever.
Right.
He's got jungle fever. We got jungle fever. We're in lust. That's not love. It's lust. We're in lust.
It's weird because she called me for a package that he had. So I'm thinking, okay, cool. My roommate's got a package. I'm going to go down there because she's supposedly going out of town. I get down there. It's an envelope. The first thing my roommate says when I hand it to him is, dude, she couldn't put it in a box. She just wanted to see my face, man. She just wanted to see my face. I showed it to her. It got you your package, okay? All right? You know what I'm saying? I took the bullet. I
got your package, and she got my package.
Right, exactly. And next time, he's going to take it. It's weird. Me and him, we're always...
Next month, the rent's only going to be $600. So, you know what? I would not be above sleeping with my landlord to get a cheaper rent.
No, dude, I would.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, but... what's worse, being the whore or being the John?
I think the John.
I think being the John too. I would have, honestly, I would have very little problem having sex with a girl if she pay for who's paying me. You know, see, you know, I wouldn't, and of course, I don't look good enough that anyone's interested in paying me. You know, when I go over to my girlfriend's house, she on my birthday she made me cook. Okay, so that tells you that no one is paying me for sex, but I would be happy to if put into that situation. So you know, it's the oldest profession, but I still can't get into it.
It's weird, man. I've actually, not that I've been paid to have sex. I've lived in places where generally I try not to talk to or associate with females around a place that I live, because in neighborhoods that I come from, you don't shit where you eat.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. So what I usually do is I go at least an hour away from, you know, if I want to find a significant other or whatever. And generally I can't get there on my own. So they just tend to offer to, you know, pay my way. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And it's weird because, like, a female, if she was in the same situation, she would be like, oh, my God, I felt like such a prostitute because he gave me money to come see him. But a guy, I'm like, really? You gonna give me money? Like, just to come sleep with you? Like, I'm in the car already. What are you talking about? Like, I'm driving already. I'm like, halfway there, you know? So, like, it's just two different worlds, man. But I'd rather be a prostitute, given this situation.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah. We're going to take a break again real quick. This is JT Foreman here with Sam. Sam the Man. S-Man Stu is right. The nickname you got.
Yep, stage name.
S-Man Stu. We are the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. This is JT Foreman here with Sam. S-Man Stu, Sam Stewart. We are the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. All right, wait, no. Hold on. We are back. Wait. See, I accidentally went into the outro. I should have gone into the intro. This is JT Foreman here with S-Man Stu. We are the Bitter Comics, and we're back. All right, so you're going to college right now, working on your bachelor's or associates?
Associates.
Associates at Santa Monica College in digital broadcasting.
Right.
Now, you were telling me earlier that you just finished filming something. Tell me about
that. I won a contest to direct a short at my school, and what you do is you take a existing movie, you take a scene, but only the script, so you have none of the director's notes. And you film that scene with some kind of idea that you would have for that scene. So pretty much what I did was I took Reservoir Dogs, and it's the scene where Mr. Forgot his name, but the guy gives everybody's names.
Okay, yeah. I remember seeing that movie. They're in a diner.
Right.
And they just finished arguing over whether or not what's his name is going to pay a tip.
Right.
And the old dude who is arranging the jewelry robbery that they're going to do is giving everyone their names. You're Mr. Brown, you're Mr. White, you're Mr.
Exactly,
Blue.
Exactly. Yeah. I did the same scene, but what I did was, instead of him naming everybody Mr. Brown and Mr. White and it being a bank job, it was the Justice League. Yeah. Okay. And instead of them robbing a jewelry store, what they're doing is they're invading the Legion of Doom.
Okay.
So Batman walks into a classroom and he starts. It's the same exact speech. All I did was tweak a word here, a word there, but it worked.
That's funny.
And he's like, you know, it does the same thing. You know, you're all going to be using aliases. You know, so you're Robin, you're Nightwing, and what happens is, you know, Mr. Pink hates his name, right? So Robin hates the fact that he's Robin, and that's, you know, that's the.
Why do I have to be Robin? I mean, it's kind of a gay bird. It's only out in the spring prancing around.
Right. Yeah. Right, and it came out pretty good. So that's what we're working on. We do a bunch of stuff in my school, but that was a project that we had recently. So
they like to make you get kind of meta on the things and try to get you to be creative about it, not just kind of straightforward.
And it's awesome because I looked at a lot of film programs before I chose the one that I'm in, and Keith Sutherland was in the program that I'm in.
Cool.
So if somebody that talented, you know, signed off on what I'm doing, then I'm like, hey, I got to be doing the right thing.
Well,
you know?
Of course, I'm sure he was in it quite a long time ago. But
So, and it was one of the only schools that I heard about on the East Coast. And I'm like, if this school is big enough for me to hear about out here, then it's got to be a good school. So, but I love the fact that, and I've been to the LA Film School. I've been to a bunch of places. This is the only school that I heard where it's more hands-on. Even at the LA Film School, you're not really doing all the things that you want to do creative wise. You'll work with the equipment, but creative wise, you know, it's not as creative.
They're
as
just teaching you the logistics of it. They're not actually having you go out and make the as much.
And with this school, you write a script. I wrote a script. You shoot. You edit. You do everything. So I was like, you know what? I love the fact that we're doing this. So that's why I got into the program.
Cool. I took a filmmaking class when I was at Fresno City College back in Fresno, but it didn't get real. advanced into it. Had one where one of the two that I did, one was a group of guys that are at one dude's house playing poker when another dude shows up and complains about the crappy day that he just came from. And then just after he finishes complaining about the date, another dude, his girl calls him, and he's like, "Yeah, honey, I'll be right over," and leaves to go to his girlfriend's house.
That's awesome.
And then the other one was about a dude who immigrated to the United States and then gets a job at Taco Bell, and he was a big-time chef in Mexico.
Oh, okay, so from
Mexico. He gets here to the U.S. and gets a job at Taco Bell. And he's like, "Man, I can't believe this is what they think Mexican food is." And so he sets off to open his own Mexican restaurant.
It sucks, man, because I had no idea Taco Bell wasn't Mexican food until I got to San Diego, which is on the border. And I was like, dude.
Well, it's Americanized and fast foodized.
Yeah.
You know, because like P.F. Chang's is not really Chinese food. It's Americanized Chinese food. And here's what I mean by that is, I don't know if you've ever eaten a P.F. Chang's.
I've actually never been to P.F. Chang's. I have been to P.F. Chang's. I have.
Yeah. Take Chinese food and increase the amount of meat in it.
Okay.
And now you have P.F. Chang's.
Okay.
You know, and their food tastes great. It's my second favorite restaurant behind Outback Steakhouse. I really, Mongolian beef is awesome. Their Chang spicy chicken is freaking awesome. I love their food. So I'm not saying any of this to make fun of them, but it's not really Chinese food.
Yeah.
Because I worked at a P.F. Chang's for a few months when I was living in Houston, and Houston, Texas, by the way. I don't think there's another one out there, but anyway, just to make sure everyone understands.
Right.
But it was funny because I was the only white guy in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And there was, like, of all the people in the kitchen, there was a white girl who was married to one of the Mexican dudes who worked there. There was a black dude, and then everyone else was a Mexican.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really talk to anyone because they didn't speak English.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, everyone thought, I got the job there the day they opened. It was a brand new store.
Yeah.
And everyone assumed that I was a plant from corporate there to see how the new restaurant is doing. Because why the hell would this white boy be working in the kitchen?
Right. That's funny, man. Like,
I was like, no, sorry. I wasn't able to ride the white guy thing into getting a high paid job. Sorry, I'm working in the kitchen for minimum wage just like the rest of you.
Yeah, man, it's funny. I didn't know, the food wasn't Mexican. I walk into a place in San Diego, and I'm like, "Hey, man, I would like a Crunchwrap Supreme."
Yeah.
And they're like, "What are you talking about?" And I was like, "Okay, well, can I get a chalupa then?" Or
yeah.
And they're like, "Dude, what the hell are you talking about?" And I look at the menu.
You went to a real Mexican restaurant, yeah. And they didn't have any of the stuff.
And I'm like, "Dude, what the crap? Like, none of the stuff were stuff that I ever seen." And well,
they made up most of those things at Taco Bell.
They did. All of it's made up. And something that I love
tacos are real and burritos are real. That's about it.
That's about it. And not even that. Well, I didn't know that the tacos that you buy at Taco Bell were I thought the same ones they make there, but no. They're these smaller tacos that either they put two taco shells on them for some reason.
Yeah, because you want to get authentic Mexican food.
Yeah.
You need to find one of those trucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, you can't get real Mexican food from any standing structure.
Right.
Okay, if it's not mobile and probably running from the health department, it's not real Mexican.
So
food.
So have you had corn yet?
Have I had the corn?
Yeah.
No, well, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
No, I have not had corn yet.
Dude, do you know what's in it?
From what I understand, it's like deep fried, and it's got goat cheese on it, and I don't know what else.
It's mayonnaise, cheese, and chili. And it sounds disgusting, dude. I know.
It sounds scary. I'm a little afraid just standing here talking about it.
Yeah, honestly. Dude, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like, it's weird. A friend of mine kept talking about was this corn. We got to find this corn. And I've known this guy for 3 years. So for 3 years, all he was talking about was corn. Dude, I was at a friend of mine's house, and he literally drove from Clovis to Jensen, because I was on Jensen, to give me this corn. And it was the most amazing thing I've ever had in my life. And then we literally hunted that, because I wanted more.
Yeah.
And then we hunted. Well, we couldn't find them. And he was like telling me, like, the corn man in Fresno is a unicorn. Okay. Yeah. All right. You never find them when you need them. One day we're coming out of the theater, and this was after, after this had already happened. Yeah. We coming out of the theater, mind our own business, dude. The corn man is right there. and we take off running, okay, to get this corn. And
dude, chase snap.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, okay, you had it once, and, you know, you generally when you have something once, it's never the same when you get it the second time. It's always, but corn, dude, it was even more amazing the second time, okay? All right? And I've only had it three times.
Well, yeah, I found, you never ended up on a ship when you were in the Navy.
I was on a
ship. Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you ever do a med cruise or a Westpac or any of the...
I did circles outside of Mexico.
Oh, you did? Okay, so you never went anywhere.
No, I didn't go anywhere. Okay. No.
I did two med cruises when I was on the Puget Sound and stationed out of Norfolk. And I always ended up finding some little, their like local version of fast food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like here in America, you get a burger, you get a hot dog or something. But you go, if you're in Greece, you get a Hero. You know, it's the pita bread with lamb meat in it and mm-hmm. this yogurt kind of dressing. And, you know, they can put other stuff, cheese and vegetables in there. And that's what they sell on the street there. In Italy, there were places selling pizza, but it's not pizza like you would have here. It'd be like, you know, the bread would be on a giant rectangular pan.
Okay.
You know, and then the toppings would be on it. There was no such thing as pizza sauce. You might get one with tomatoes on it, but they don't have pizza sauce on their pizza. It'll just be like cheese or ham or whatever on that. And the guy's standing there with a couple of knives, and he holds the knife at different spots, and you tell him enough, and then he cuts the size you want and sells it to you by weight.
Okay.
And then
was that good? Like,
was it was really good. I thought it was too salty, but it tasted really great. And also, the best ice cream I've ever had in my life was this green building in the park in Gaeta, Italy.
Yeah,
it was awesome. It was amazing ice cream. It was incredible. But I guess gelato technically is what they call it there. But and then in France they had this thing called a smash sandwich, where you take a small loaf of French bread, and you open it up. You put the hamburger inside of it, and it's like a long rectangular shaped piece of ground beef that they cook it, hamburger.
Okay.
And then they put the fries right in there, and then they put it into this waffle iron. They put it into this waffle iron thing.
Okay.
And it squashes it and toasts the French bread.
Okay.
And then, I would then open it up and put a bunch of ketchup in there. But then, yeah, that's a smash sandwich.
All right. Okay, cool. I can dig that.
One thing I thought was really funny is that in France, they're called American fries.
That is hilarious, dude.
So in America, they're called French fries, which that's why I found it so humorous. Like, when the Iraq War was starting off and France didn't want to get involved, there was that one congressman who's like, I'm gonna put forth a bill to change the name of French fries to American fries.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what, they already call it American fries over there.
It's weird, man. Like, a lot of things people don't realize that, you know, they're just American versions of whatever, you know, it is. And football isn't football. It's American football.
Yeah.
You know, football is it's soccer.
And the rest of the world, they all call it football and soccer.
Yeah. We're the only ones that call soccer. They call it football. And it is football. What we have is not football at all.
They're not using their foot. You only occasionally do you use your foot in football. Yeah, it should not be called football.
To kick. The only you kick it either, you do an onside kick, you kick it to start the game, or you're kicking it because halftime's over.
Yeah.
When you're punting and after
but a vast majority of it, you're using your hands, you're throwing things, you're catching things.
Yeah.
You're using your hands.
Yeah.
It should not be called football.
It shouldn't be.
I don't.
Or if it is, call it American football. Don't call it just football.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be the national football.
Well, you know, I had someone get mad at me for calling this country America once. Yeah. He's like, well, you know, I'm from Mexico. We're in America too. It's in North America. You shouldn't call your country America. You're the United States of America.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? That's too many syllables and we don't have time.
Yeah. And not only that, before the Mayflower, there was 100 years of Mexican conquest that happened that helped this, that helped form this country. For instance, Santa Monica,
Spanish conquest.
Yeah, Santa Monica, California is called Santa Monica, California because Cortez and his homeboys got here and named it Santa Monica.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's all, Mexico, and they all speak Spanish.
Right.
That is not their native language.
Not at all.
You know, there's I told you about this. This guy Johnny Pineda, he has this bit thing he does. Well, he'll switch to Spanish during his routine.
Yeah.
And then he'll say, if you don't speak Spanish, learn. It's a native language, you know, because we're here in California. And, you know, I went up after him on a show one time and I said, Spanish is from Spain, which was in Europe.
Yeah.
Spanish is the language of the white conquerors.
Right.
If you're here in Fresno and you want to speak the native language, you need to learn Chukchansi-ish or Table Mountainese.
Right, exactly.
Chukchansi and Table Mountain are the names of the two Indian casinos nearby.
Right.
So, but anyway, we're going to take a break again real quick. I am JT Foreman here with S-Man Stu, Sam yep. Stewart. We're the Bitter Comics, and we will be right back. This is JT Foreman here with S-Man Stu, Sam Stewart. We are the Bitter Comics, and we're back. All right, now, Sam, you lived in Fresno.
For a while, yeah.
For a little while. Yeah. After you got out of the Navy, you lived in Fresno for a while, did the comedy scene there, and then you moved down here to L.A. to go to school.
Right.
And you've gotten a bit involved in the comedy scene here.
Oh, yeah. Really, in a really big way.
So, what... tell me a few things that are, I mean, obviously they're vastly different from each other because you've got this huge, you know, industrial entertainment complex in LA and Hollywood, and they don't have it in Fresno. But what kind of stuff have you seen that's like different on how people run open mics and that kind of?
Well, I have my own show. It's technically not an open mic, but I don't tell people not to contact me because there's more than what I want booked on the show. But, I would say the drastic difference between being in Fresno and then being here is here people tend to think that they're gonna supposedly make it if yeah. they do enough shows. And that's what the bigger comics are telling us. The bigger comics keep telling us, do as many shows as you can, do as many shows as you can. And we think because every now and then we perform one of them or every now and then, you know, you get up at the Comedy Store or the Laugh Factory that you're just going to make it. So it's more of I don't need anybody but myself because that's what's going to help me make it. In Fresno, I got to see people who were really good, who got up, you know, when I first started out, there were plenty of places in Fresno to get up, even if you weren't at the places that, like, you know, were the more popular places, you could still get up.
Yeah.
You know, there was more camaraderie, it felt like people helped you out more, you know, yeah. if I needed help in a bit, there was somebody to help me out with a bit, you know, it just felt like the people were closer, especially the comics.
Yeah, but there's no gold ring to grow after there.
Exactly.
That might be why. I mean, because like here, someone might be looking at it and be like, well, if I help him, then they're going to see him. And what if he then gets the opportunity that I should have gotten because I helped him?
Yeah. And
so no one wants to help anybody else. Whereas in Fresno, it's like, who's going to see you?
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you know, the movie caster who's going to show up at a comedy show that would have picked you, but end up picking that other guy that you put up instead.
Yeah. And here it sucks because the comics only want to perform at a couple places, which is why if you go to the comedy store right now, you're going to see the same 20 comics you see every time you go there. Okay, yeah. they only want to get up at a couple places, so they don't want to get up with these open mics that are around. So when you see those comics, you're like, man, you know, they're a lot better because they're doing more jokes and yeah. they're getting up a lot more. And two, you start thinking to yourself, like, man, if these guys aren't really making it, like, what do you got to do then? Yeah. You know, and I think with those guys at the Comedy Store Laugh Factory, they didn't realize that, man. Like, you're not going to make it on your own. We need to start helping each other out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
especially getting the bigger shows because none of us do bringer shows. None of us. So I don't know why we're fighting each other to get to them.
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine the other day.
I don't have 10 people I can bring to a bringer show at the Belly Room and yeah, Comedy Store.
Yeah, no, nobody does. A friend of mine the other day, and this is something that I ran into him as well as myself, is he had like 20 comics come to see me at the Comedy Store. The problem with that is the comics can get him free anyway. So he's thinking, okay, I fill the audience up with comics and, you know, they'll laugh and they'll help me out. And the person who was putting the show on was like, no, I want 10 paying people. And he went, well, why didn't you say that then?
Yeah.
You know, and that's my point. When I started doing bringer shows, I was like, look, dude, I can give you $100 and do the 10 minutes. Is that what you really want? Like, if that's what you want, I'll give it to him. And when the guy was like, yeah, I was like, nah, screw you. I'm not going to do that. And not only that, what I'm going
to
do.
Actually, that's not actually what they want either.
No.
Because although they might be willing to take that, what they actually want is for you to bring 10 paying customers because not only do they pay the $10 to get in.
Right. They pay the drink minimum.
Two drink minimum. And yeah. yeah.
And at the Comedy Store, dude, for your 10 people, they're spending well over $30.
Yeah.
Each one of them. Well over. Just to see you.
Yeah.
So it's like, once you burn that bridge four times, nobody's going to want to come see you.
Yeah. Well, you know, that I think that's why you have the alternative comedy scene come up in. Because I think you told me this, is that the alternative comedy isn't about the material. It's about where you're performing.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's an alternative to a comedy club.
Right.
So that's people started doing shows in other kinds of places, and that's what the alter is, like Meltdown Comics. It's in the room in the back of a comic book store.
And my show happens at the Barbara Morrison Performing Arts Center. We do it on Tuesdays from 7:30 to about 11 o'clock. But it's two shows, so it's one at 7:30. We stop it, and then at 9:30 we shot the second show.
Okay.
But and it's a lot of fun, and every comic, literally every comic that's done it, has wanted to come back. Not only that, wanted to bring other comics. So every time I do the show, it's like a bunch of new comics, and the people
that's,
put the
that's every week, every Tuesday.
Yeah, every Tuesday night, man. Oh. And it's cool because one of the guys who puts the show on, like my boss per se, he's an original Temptation.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I know. So I was like, it's awesome. I get to work with, like, you know, one of the original Temptations, and it's just a fun show. And he's given me pretty much complete creative control of the show. I decide who's on the show. I host, you know. So it's awesome being able to host and book for my show, man. And what I want to do is I wanted to completely go against the bringer shows. So I give the comics the same amount of time. There's no restrictions on material. It's not a bringer show. There's no drink minimums. And for the most part, it's free to come in. We just ask, you know, for a donation, and we just pass a basket around. And you can if you want, and if you don't want to, it's fine, you know. But
yeah,
and that's it. And people love the show. They love it. And I'm like, why can't the Comedy Store do this? Or the Laugh Factory, you know? But they're not going
to
do it.
Well, they have to make money. They have to make money. And they feel like they... I don't know. They feel like they deserve to make a lot of money.
Exactly.
And you know what? It's like the club bars and restaurants down in Fresno that I see do a lot of open mics. They'll start somewhere. It'll happen for 2 or 3 weeks, and then it'll stop.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And, you know, for some reason, the owner of the club, the bar, or the restaurant, they figure, well, I'll put open mic on the door and not put any money or effort into promoting it at all, and 100 people are going to magically show up and buy drinks.
Right.
And then when it doesn't happen, after a couple of weeks, they get pissed off at the comedian and...
Close it down.
Close the show down, and now here's another place that's never going to do comedy again because, oh, comedy sucks. No, comedy doesn't suck. It just takes a long time to build up a spot.
I mean,
you know, it was like a year before Ty Palms started regularly having a good audience.
Dude, Ty Palms broke my heart when I found out that there wasn't an open mic there anymore, dude. Like,
yeah.
That was one of the... Honestly, had it not been for Ty Palms, I would probably not be doing jokes right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was Ty Palms where I found comedy was happening again in Fresno, and I was able to start doing it again.
Yeah, and it's weird because I feel like I'm always this guy. I'm always the guy who comes in at the, like, peak of a place, and I love it because of what it is, and then it just just a freaking appears. And I'm like, crap, dude. But because I never saw... When I came into Ty Palms, it was already well known. Like, everyone I knew the guys that put the show on.
Yeah.
And I got real, really good with the... I became really good friends with David, the owner, and, you know, those guys, and Aaron Stewart to put the show on, man. And, you know, I love Aaron and Dev, dude. He put me on my first couple of shows, and Danny Minch put me on a bunch of shows early. TK, like, all of those people I met through Ty Palms, man. Yeah. Had it not been...
I like Aaron, too. He just needs to stop doing coke.
Dude, I know, right? I met you.
I'm just kidding.
I met you at Ty Palms, dude. So it's like, well, actually, wait.
Yeah, Aaron should not stop doing coke. He should continue doing coke.
Right.
He's doing great as he is.
And he's, dude, Aaron.
Yeah, I met you there, and most of the, you know, a lot of the comics in Fresno I met. I met either there or at Crossroads when Danny Minch was doing Wednesday night shows there.
Yeah.
And they don't do the comedy there anymore, and I still don't know exactly what happened.
Yeah. But. And it's weird because I still get the emails that they're doing, like, other things there. But it's weird, man. How Aaron did his show is like how I do my show now, man. Like, you know, I get the comics, you know, I give them 10 minutes and we didn't have to bring anybody when we did those shows, which was awesome because it was always an audience, you know. So I don't know why it shut down, man. It broke my heart, dude. I'm just hoping Fresno gets a place like that because I love Fresno, dude. I love Fresno. I will keep going up there. I'll keep spending the money to get up there. I'll keep doing shows up there.
Well, I know Aaron is working on getting a new place, and they started doing it pretty regularly at the Sky Lounge, and then I think that stopped now. But Aaron Stewart is working on getting somewhere their comedy is going to be happening more regularly. So. All right,
good, man.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hope he does it, man, because if he does it, I'll be there, dude. I'll be there to support him, man. Because we need more of those places there. And I'm hoping that the place that I'm doing now in L.A., I can get up to that kind
of
point.
What's the name of it again?
It's called the Barbara Morrison Performing Arts Center. And it's in Los Angeles, California. It's a great place. It's run by Cornelius Grant. You can either find him online or you can find me, Sam Stewart, comedian, on Facebook.
And the show's every Tuesday at 7:30 and 9:30.
Right.
So there's two shows.
Yes, two shows.
Do you have the same acts on both shows?
No. Generally, the first show we did because people who do cleaner comedy, we didn't want them competing with people who did like really really really, you know, blue comedy.
Yeah.
So our idea was to have a cleaner show, not exactly a clean show, but a cleaner show for 7:30 to about, you know, 9 o'clock, 9:15, and then from 9:30 to 11 o'clock, we had pretty much just a dirty show.
Did you ever put the same, somebody on both shows?
Yeah, we do. Every now and then, I have comics who I love, and they'll do either both shows, or I've had comics who do the blue show. Well, the clean show, they see how that it's not super clean, and they go, "Oh, okay, cool. I can do the raw, you know, the raw show," and then they do the 9:30 show, you know. Cool. And I've had people who've done the raw show and gone, "You know, I want to do the cleaner show next time," and they do that. So it's not either comic can do both. What we're trying to avoid is a guy who isn't funny but thinks he's Cat Williams. That's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
So as long as you're not doing that, then generally you can get on the show.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, so they can contact you. Just look for Sam Stewart Comedian on Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook. Yeah, or shoot me an email at samstewartcomedy@gmail.com, and you know you'll find me.
All right, cool. I'll try to put a link to that in the show notes.
Okay.
And we're gonna not quite at an hour yet, but we're gonna stop now so we can get over to the Comedy Store's open mic on time. Hopefully.
All right.
Hey, Sam, thanks a lot. Thanks for doing my podcast, and thanks a lot for letting me crash at your place.
No problem, dude.
While I'm in town, this is a lot better than paying for a hotel in L.A.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, dude.
It's really great to see you, and everybody, thanks for listening. This is JT Foreman here with S-Man Stu. We're the Bitter Comics, and I will talk to you next week. Peace.